Throughout history, freethinkers have outraged the religious with their wacky ideas about the virtues of free speech, reason, and of course, eating babies. Now, God is dying, and it's time to dispose of his remains. From the pits of hell, Satan sends two puppets of the imperialist West and the Zionist Jews against God, Islam, and tiny kittens to bring you their propaganda and conspire for a new world order. This is Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment with Ali Rizvi and Armin Navabi.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Secular Jihadists for a Muslim Enlightenment. And talk about secular jihad. You know, we've got something serious going on over here. So again, my name is Ali Rizvi, and with me is Armin Navabi, who you may have heard of. And so the topic of this podcast actually just came up recently with the events of the last week, right? So what has been happening is that Armin, as you know, is an equal opportunity offender when it comes to anti-theism. And whenever he blasphemes or criticizes Islam, and we're going to talk about why it's important to blaspheme in a little bit. But whenever he does that, he noticed that Hindu nationalists, and these are like Hindutva trolls, we're not talking about all the Hindus, we're talking about Hindutva nationalist trolls. They tend to cheer him on. They tend to cheer me on all the time. I have a lot of followers who just love it when we criticize Islam and we talk about it. But what he decided to do this week, he decided to test to see how consistent they are. And he put out a really harmless tweet, actually completely harmless, about how he finds Hindu goddesses attractive, right? Hindu goddesses, again, the fictional characters. Some people really believe in them. But it's almost complimentary. It was almost positive that he finds them sexy. The online response was massive. It was vile. And we're going to talk about how vile it got. And it was actually threatening. There were death threats. There were rape threats. There were threats against, people we know, people like that Armin knows, family, everything. And it happened in a way that he has never even, that he says, and I'll let him speak for himself too, he's never even experienced with Islamic fundamentalists. So within hours, Armin Navabi's name was trending on Indian Twitter. The goddess, atheist, all of these things were trending. And it became a big story. Major personalities, journalists, actors who have sympathy to this Hindutva nationalist mentality, fundamentalism, joined in and piled on. Right. So a quick note before we go on with this is I want to talk about why it's really important, why we talk about blasphemy and why we think it's important. We personally have friends who have been jailed, who've been tortured or killed for this completely victimless crime of blasphemy, of criticizing ideas in old, ancient, sacred books. Okay. Many of these people have had to flee their home countries and they can't return. On September 10th of this Thursday, I'm interviewing one certain person who is actually hiding out in a place that I won't mention, and he's going to be appearing anonymously, and he'll tell you about what he's been through simply for changing his mind and criticizing the religion of his parents. So this is actually a very serious issue. It's a very personal issue. These are people who haven't seen their children for years because they've been isolated, and we talk about this a lot. And now we're realizing that it isn't just people from the Islamic religion who are sensitive to this. We're realizing it's a much more widespread problem. And I know, Armin, so start, you've been attacked by...
it's not just me, though. Like, they are going after everybody from in India that they're supporting me. Like, anybody that's from India that is liking my tweets, is retweeting, that is putting a message of support for me, that is, even people that are saying that, oh, I condemn what Armin did. By the way, like, all I did was I posted a picture of Kali, the Hindu goddess, and it was a really nice picture of her, right? It was sexy, but it wasn't pornographic, and it wasn't, like, derogatory in any way. It was very, like, elegant. It was beautiful, beautiful art. And I said, like, oh, she's sexy, and I would like, you know, I said that, maybe I'll convert to Hinduism, right? So, you know, just joking around about that, right? And now we have, it seemed like a lot milder than what I do within Islam, right? Like, I desecrated the Quran, I burned the Quran, I, like, t- this was obviously like was anti-Islamic. This doesn't even seem like it was supposed to be offensive. And I mean, to be fair, I knew I was going to get a backlash, but I didn't think it's going to get this level of a backlash, right? But the real people that like that now are a target because of this that I'm like worried is the people that are in India and are openly showing support for what I'm doing, and also everybody else that is associated with Atheist Republic in India, right? So I'm worried about them as well. Like, there are these journalists that supported me, and now they're going around and, you know, deleting their, unfollowing me, deleting the tweets that they showed that they supported me. They're going after, they're going after their wives, their sisters, their daughters, of somebody for just putting like a tweet saying like, hey guys, cut it out. Like even like, and so many of them, like even the people that said like, you know what, I think what Armin did was disgusting, but what these Hindutva people are doing is more disgusting. Like they weren't even the people who didn't agree with my original tweet, but just because they said like they called out the mob that is coming at my family, like I every time I go on Twitter, I'm just flooded with Photoshop pornographic images of my mom, right? And death threats. And now, I don't know if Susanna is here in the live chat. We have 3 legal cases against me. They're trying to bring it to Canada now, and just like they're trying to get, you know, because they're tagging Justin Trudeau, Ali. Did you know that?
No, what are they saying about Justin
Trudeau? They're tagging Justin Trudeau, and they're asking him to do something about this.
Oh, yeah, they do that. The only people who do this are the Hindutva people. These Hindutva, like, motherfuckers, like, what they do is they'll take your, so these are, these are the equivalent of the jihadists and the terrorists and the Islam. People say, well, they're not chopping off heads. They're not killing anybody. But number one, there's 2 things here. And Armin, like, I want to hear what you think of this, because this is a feedback that everybody says, well, hey, at least we're not killing people like the Islamic jihadists have. And again, we're no friends of Islamic jihadists. We've been waging essentially a war against them for the last 3-4 years. Last 10 years, actually. But what these guys do is they bring up this argument that we're not killing people. Now, do you know how many people in India have been killed just for eating beef? There's dozens of people have been killed just for eating beef. And the other thing is they haven't gotten the level of provocation. Can you imagine what would happen to these people? What would happen to these fires raging in their heads if they had been subject to the same kind of thing that the Muslim community? Muslim community is obviously way, way bigger. They have been maligned in so many other different ways. You know, people they come out and they attack it. They've drawn cartoons. They've done all of these things on a national level. If you had that kind of scale for these guys, I mean, you can see what they're doing now over the cartoon of, it wasn't even a cartoon where you're not supposed to draw the cartoon. It was nothing. It was just a cartoon of an attractive goddess. Can you imagine what would happen if the provocation was more wide scale than that? But what do you think about that? What do you think of that response? How do you respond to those people?
Well, first, I do want to mention, though, I don't want to like generalize right now. I do want to like give a shout out to, you know, a lot of not just atheist activists in India that are sending me messages of support and love. And I do need that right now. I've never been overwhelmed in the past 15 years of doing this. I've never been this overwhelmed with a backlash like this, right? But I do want to make sure that I do not. So I really appreciate the messages of support, and it does. You know, I didn't know how much I needed it until that came as well. And it's really hard to notice them because of the wave of these attacks that are coming at me. But I try to look for them. But I do want to mention that it's not just the atheists, activists in India, and the secularists and other people. There's also like some groups of Hindu, like really religious Hindu people that are like desperately trying to reach out and show me another side of all of this. And some of them are saying, like, what's wrong with this tweet? So I do want to mention that because I don't want to generalize. There was a group of Hindus that were going around, really, like, really religious, proud Hindus that were going around and trying to report all these tweets, trying to remove them. But again, some of the ones that are publicly came out, some big YouTubers, Hindu YouTubers came out and said this is not right. Like there was, I don't know, I don't want to even describe it, but there was one of the posts that was the most vile one. It just went so far, and it actually, I mean, it crushed me, but it seemed like it was so vile that it basically crushed everybody else that was looking at it as well. Yeah. And, you know, people called it out. And the people who are calling it out are now, some of them are regretting it. So a lot of them, and again, at least I'm not in India. Like, they're coming for those people in India, right? I mean,
for sympathizing.
For calling it out as like, to not do this, like to not go after me like this, right? I don't know. I'm sorry for anybody that is in India that is now suffering. I don't know if I should like. I don't know. I don't know if. I do. Yeah. Never mind. I don't know. This is new territory for me. But as long when it comes to normalizing blasphemy, I've been. I burned the Quran. I desecrated the Quran. I did the Allah has gay sign. I did the rainbow Kaaba thing, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, we got major backlash for all of that. But this is like, it's not even close to this. It's not even close to this. Like, I don't know if I could explain to people. You know, to understand how big of a reaction this is, right? Like I have had Bollywood actors and actresses calling out their community, like people with 2 million, 1 million followers, sending their mob after me. We have politicians filing police reports against me and people wanting to sue me. And you know, so, and there are some other things that I don't want to say, right? But I mean, this is insane, and this wasn't even, we didn't even escalate to the level that we had escalated. This, like, in reaction to what? In reaction to something that wasn't even derogatory in any way, something that wasn't insulting in any way, right? So I can't even imagine what the reaction would have been if we did something. Like, here's another thing, guys. I'm not backing down. Like, they think they've broken me and I'm gonna stop, right? I'm not gonna back down. I'm not gonna back down. Like, I don't give in to intimidation like this, right? I'm gonna escalate. But it's just, I'm getting tired, though. Like, I'm getting tired of me. Like, why? I just feel like, you know, the whole point of this blasphemy thing is like spreading the risks. It seems like, you know, when first it was the woke mob and then it was now the Muslim mob and now it's the Hindutva mob. And I just like, it seems like I am like just becoming like a lightning rod. You know, I just wish like, even like when it comes to the hashtag desecrate the Quran, like there's not that many people that are putting their own videos out. That hashtag went viral. But if you look at the fact that everybody is just using my video, like it's my video that is being used for that hashtag. Like everybody like, yes, yes, hashtag the Quran. And I keep looking at the hashtag like, oh, wow, so many people are using it. Let me see their videos. It's my video. They're posting my video. And like, what happened to spreading the risk and all of that? Like, why do I have to like always pay for normalizing all of this? I mean, I do want to normalize this, but I just wish like there were more people, at least not for the, like there are a whole bunch of people in India that are supporting me, but they're not spreading the risk. They're attracting more risk than I am. Like they're in worse situation than I, like why are the people that do not, that are safe, why can't they join us in spreading some of the, you know, risk? Like, Okay, so by the way, if you do want to do the spread the risk, make sure like it's like small risk, right? Like I'm not asking people that they're gonna have like major consequences to their life. Like, please don't do that. Okay, you know, again, I'm an activist. You're not an activist. You don't have to do this, right? But if for the people that think that there's not gonna be any backlash to them or that they're not gonna pay that much if they do something like this, you know, maybe use hashtag desecrate the Quran to normalize that, and maybe make your own video instead of like keep sharing my video. And also for, you know, for this one, Sexy Cali, hashtag Sexy Cali, maybe make your own art. I don't know what to do. I'm hiring designers right now. I'm using Atheist Republic's patron money to make our built-in Atheist Republic Cali art. Ali, this is what we're going to do, okay? I'm going to make... Once every month, I'm going to make a new art, okay? The first one is going to be our own in-house designed, owned by Atheist Republic, Sexy Cali, okay? And we're going to make that available for free for people to use. We're not going to copy strike them if they use it in their profile pictures or their cover photos, okay? But commercial rights, we're going to keep it for Atheist Republic so we could put it on t-shirts and everything else. But we're going to make it publicly available, like people could use it free of charge anywhere they want, okay, for their own non-commercial reasons, right? Profile pay, cover, whatever, posting on Twitter, Facebook. But then that would be the first one. I'm going to do Sexy Cali. The second one is going to be what was that goddess with the lion? I keep forgetting her name. Durga. So it's going to be Durgama. So it's going to be, I think, Durgama or another Hindu goddess. It's going to be a lesbian kiss between Kali and Durgama, and the lion will be there as well, right? So that's going to be our second design. It's going to be one design every month, okay? And then the third one, this is the exciting one, okay? The third one is going to be a making out between Krishna and Muhammad, okay? Krishna and Muhammad will be making out. That was going to be our design. It's going to be very like sexy, but it's going to be all of these. And every month, every preceding month, we're going to make a new one.
I love that. And you know what? I'll tell you something. So I'm going to speak for a lot of people and respond to what you said, that, you know, you're an activist. A lot of other people aren't. I know there's a lot of people who want to do this stuff, but they do have jobs. They do have, you know, other issues like that, that they can't risk. And then they have jobs that are unrelated to this stuff, so they often can. But that's not what you have to do. If you want to do something, I mean, I could actually, like what Abdullah Gandal and Abdullah Samir do, they break down the issues in the Quran. You can have something like...
That as well.
Yeah, so you can talk about certain criticisms that you have. Like, okay, well, the Quran wasn't preserved. There are two different versions of it, and hashtag it desecrate the Quran. I mean, all of these things can... Though you can do it in your own way that is less risky for you. And the other thing is like the Krishna and Muhammad cartoon that you're talking about, like that I would share too, and I would probably caption it something about Hindu and Muslim unity, because that's actually really badly needed. And I think that can be a really, really good symbol of that.
Right.
And frame it positively. It was like the rainbow thing on the Kaaba, right?
Right. But by the way, we're not going to make it like any, like, you know, pornographic or derogatory. It's not going to look insulting. It's going to look like a celebration. It's going to look classy and elegant, and, you know, something pleasing to the eye. Not like a lot of anti-Islam activists, they share cartoons of Muhammad, and I just think it's gross. I want to make something that if you're offended by it, normal people will look at it and like, why would you be offended by this? This looks nice, right? I don't want to make something that is, you know, what the things that I want to normalize when it comes to desensitizing of a community are the things that are provocative but shouldn't be provocative. Do you know what I mean? Like, for example, Allah is gay. When I did the Allah is gay sign, right?
Yeah, I was just
people like, why are you provoking people? I'm like, because this shouldn't be provoking. This shouldn't be provocative, goddammit, right? And when I like tear the Quran, I'm like, oh, Armin, why are you provoking people? Because tearing the Quran should be as provoking as tearing this piece of paper like this. This is a piece of paper with nothing. This is as bad as doing this with the Quran, because it shouldn't be provoking. It's just a piece of paper. It's just a piece of paper, okay? It's not harming anybody, okay? So it's not provoking for the sake of provoking. It was provoking for the sake of a day when it can't provoke anybody because people have come to their senses. The same as draw Muhammad Day. Guys, and people say, oh, Army, why don't you criticize the Islam in a different way? Or we do, God damn it. What the fuck are you talking about? These are two different forms of activism. One of them is about why this is wrong. We go through the Quran. We go through the Hadith. Have I not done that? Have we not done that? We have done that more, okay? We have done that a lot more, okay? This is about something else. This is about breaking taboos. This is about removing barriers to freedom of expression. This is another form of activism. People are like, oh, why didn't you do this? Where have you fucking been?
Actually, even more than that, it's what it's about is actually, it's showing solidarity with the people who are jailed, who've been killed, who've been mobbed to death, right? For simply criticizing these words, for simply just not even desecrating this stuff, but just questioning it. Like, these people have paid with their lives. They've paid with their livelihoods. They've gone, and there are many. And these are, again, they're personal friends of ours, okay, who are imprisoned right now, are doing this. So the thing is, if they told you that, okay, why do you want to provoke? What's the problem? What's the point of it? You know, it seems so silly. Well, if that wasn't the case, if there weren't other people who were actually, you know, paying with their lives because of this stuff, it wouldn't really be that important. I don't think that we'd care about it. Who wants to spend their energy desecrating a book? Who cares? But the problem is that you're told not to do it, and you're told that if you do it, you're going to pay with your life.
Right.
And people are paying with their life.
I'm getting threats of beheading. I was like, wow, how very Islamic of these people, right?
I have a question for you. If you were in, if this mob that's coming after you right now, that's relentless, and I think there's probably like, I don't know, tens and tens and tens of thousands of responses to you that are just absolutely vile and violent and threats. If these people were physically around you, okay, would you fear for their lives? Because that's what they're saying. Hey, you know, we're not going to do anything violent to them. But would you, based on these things, what do you think they'd do to you?
I don't know, but I'm scared. Like, I would be scared because I don't know. But
can you go through some of the things that they've said that they do to you if you were there?
They lynching, beheading, beating the shit out of me until I die, raping my families in front of me. What?
Do you have any specific things that you remember that they said? Like the specific stuff that
these are specific. These are there. Like, oh, you want me to like read the tweets? Like, I don't know, I can find a tweet. Like,
if you have any. Like,
I don't have it in front of me. There was like actual, like, if I will behead you, like, I don't know if this is exactly like I've been retweeting them. Yeah, I mean, there's one that was less like bringing lynching back, lynch apostates or something like that. There was a lot of that. But most of them rape threats. Not against me, but it's, you know, just, you know, against people, women and my loved ones, right? So again, those are that. But one thing I also don't want to mention that is, guys, in the live chat is just our patrons here. I like this, by the way. I like this because when we do secular jihadists, it's just like a quiet, because we only make the live chat available to our patrons. Mm-hmm. So it's like, usually when I do other places, it's just like so noisy and it's just so hard. This is like a closed community with just us and our patrons. So you guys in the live chat, if you have any questions or if you wanted me to talk about anything specific, please let me know. I do also want to mention that atheism became trending because of all of this. For the first time in India. For the first time, atheism was trending in India. So that was interesting. And also, Ali, you know, all of this started because of Muhammad Hijab, right? You know, the whole exchange. You know,
the Hindu thing started with that?
Muhammad Hijab is responsible for starting. Basically, what happened is that Muhammad Hijab is responsible for getting atheism trending in the second most populated country in the world. So that's a butterfly effect. If you want me to go through it step by step,
yeah, that's actually What is it? What's a step by step? So Muhammad Hijab is this Dawah guy. He's like this Islamic preacher in the UK, right? who's just, I mean, he's a maniac. But okay, so yeah, go through it step by step.
Well, okay, so Muhammad Hijab is a Dawah guy, is like an, a Muslim preacher, apologist, a very bad one. Because sometimes I feel like maybe he's like a secret ex-Muslim on our side, but given the results of what he's doing. But he's like a very, very popular Dawah guy. I don't know, do people know what Dawah means?
Dawah means, yeah, it's invitation. It's proselytizing, inviting people to come to the Quran, to Islam, right. Yeah.
So he went after apostate prophets and Abdullah Samir's popular ex-Muslim YouTubers. He went after their wives because they were insulting Islam, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a huge drama. I mean, I don't want to get into details of that. It was back and forth, and then it ended with a major surprise, quote-unquote, debate against apostate prophet. David Wood got involved. It was, okay, so that's like a whole other story, right? But ended up like David Wood, which is a Christian but supports ex-Muslims, he started like desecrating the Quran. Is it because to challenge, because he was telling you know, Muhammad Hijab, that you think we can't escalate, we can escalate. And then I tried to show solidarity that, like, yes, we can, like, we can escalate. And you guys, you know, you guys going after people's wives, and because why? Because we're insulting Islam. Like, we, and, you know, we thought, like, we showed them, like, look, they're more, they're saying that it's okay, justifies going after people's wives because we're insulting Islam or we're desecrating the Quran. And we basically showed the, you know, everybody that, look, these people value pieces of paper more than actual human being, right? So I desecrated the Quran, but in the first video I did both the Bible and the Quran, just to let David Wood and his following know that we also blaspheme against Christianity. I just want to make sure that I do not, you know, people know where I stand, right? Just, I don't want to get like a whole bunch of people that think like, oh, I'm just going to attack on Islam and we're Christian and yeah, go here. I mean, like, yeah, okay, you could support me, but just know that I'm also blaspheming against Christianity, right? So I desecrated the Bible and the Quran. But to be fair to Christians, they didn't care. A lot of them came and said, like, you know what, desecrate the Bible all you want. I support your message, blah, blah, blah. I didn't get a single Christian that was like, yeah, this is wrong. A single one, right? But I just wanted to make sure that people know. But so that got to the hashtag desecrate the Quran eventually, where I just focused on the Quran, because that's what needed to be normalized, you know. But then I saw, you know, Abdullah Samir would keep going back and forth against, like, he was going against, is this good tactics? There's not good tactics. Oh, no. And then he also was like, oh, my God, look, we're a lot of the people that are liking what we're doing, they're far right Hindutva people. I don't know, like, where, like, this is like we're appealing to a questionable audience. And then it was Abdullah Samir first that went and put out an art. I think he wanted to make sure that he's blaspheming. So just like I was wanting to make sure that I'm blaspheming against Christianity, just to let David Wood's audience, if I'm attracting any of David Wood's audience, to know that, okay, you know, you can support me, but know where I stand. I think Abdullah Samir noticed that, oh, there was an article that, oh, so this is what happened. OP India published an article about me when I doing the Desecrate the Quran. And OP India was like this very popular far-right Hindutva website, very, very popular. And the Hindutva people, they just loved it. They just loved it. That article was going viral, and so many messages of support was under it. And I think Abdullah Samir noticed that and like, look at who we're attracting, right? We're attracting far-right people. So he went and looked for a Hindu goddess, another art, and he posted like, hey, I'm going to blaspheme as well. Is this okay? And he got some backlash for that from a whole bunch of Hindus. And he's like, oh, you look at these, Abdullah Samir was like, oh, look at these Hindutva people. Why are they not tolerant of this blasphemy? And I was like, I noticed it. And I was like, yeah, Abdullah Samir is right. I need to like go and see if I could blaspheme against Hinduism as well. And I wanted to do something mild just to make a point. Like, look, I'm not even saying anything negative, like, because I noticed that Abdullah Samir didn't say anything against Hinduism. He just posted a sexy image of a Hindu goddess, right? So I wanted to do the same, and without actually being derogatory and insulting, and even celebrating the goddess, just to show that, look at these people. They're so like this. We have a problem here as well. We need some desensitization here as well. So I expected the backlash. I didn't expect hundreds of thousands of people type of backlash. I didn't expect to be exposed to, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Photoshop images of my of pornographic images of my family, being exposed to that. I didn't expect people. I didn't expect the police and politicians and Bollywood actors and actresses to be coming after me. I didn't expect to be sued and have a criminal case filed against me. I didn't expect getting more death threats in 3 days than I got from the Muslims in my entire... I got more death threats from Hindutva in 3 days than I have gotten death threats that from Muslims in the past 15 years.
I know. Right. I've been seeing that. I have, by the way, I just, whenever I commented on this, and I've commented on it a few times here and there on, you know, on Twitter and everything like that, every time I've done it, I've been so inundated with these notifications. I mean, I just announced our this podcast, everything I'm doing, and they're already going nuts about this. So it's just... there is a lot of sensitivity. I mean, this is actually more intense than anything I've seen against Islam. And I think what's happened is that in the past, Hinduism just hasn't been blasphemed against this way, the way that Islam has on an international scale. So you haven't really seen anything like this. And this is for a religion where they there isn't even any direct doctrine saying that you have to punish blasphemers. They don't even have that. Like with Muslims, at least there's a command. Like, I mean, not I'm not defending it. I think it's actually terrible. We call it out all the time. But there's a command saying that, you know, if you're sort of a brainless, indoctrinated Islamic fundamentalist type, and, you know, you see, okay, someone blasphemes, this is what we have to do. Right? But in this case, there isn't even that. It's not even there. Like, there's a doctrinal thing that you have to do anything. This is just exposing the kind of mentality that these people have. Right. That's the mentality, and it's absolutely, and again, like the vast majority of, I think, most Hindu people, one of the best things about India is it's a secular state, it's pluralistic. The majority of the Hindu people overall are absolutely, like, they would never ever do something like this, like the kind of insults against your mom and everything, they wouldn't. But like,
but this, again, I do want to, I do
of Hindu fundamentalism and nationalism, right? That is sort of double dogmatic, is it just shows you what this does to people's brains.
I do want to mention, you know, I am overwhelmed, but I'm gonna the main people that right now, again, Susanna has been doing a great job trying to protect them. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, but the main people that are gonna be suffering are the people in India. And they know that they can't. A lot of people realize that they can't do anything against me because I'm not in India, but so they're gonna go after the people who support me in India. So that's the main people right now that we need to be worried about. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, images on my screen is like, what, like, yeah, like it's bad, but like, what is, like, you know, it's just like, it's not that bad. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, so I'm gonna be fine. Like, I don't want to play. I want to act like. I mean, I'm exposing them. Like, I'm exposing the problem. You know, a huge. Like, if they keep doing this to me, I wish they were just doing it to me instead of going after the people in India. Because I'll just highlight everything that they sent my way. I'll just highlight them and be like, look, this is a problem. Like, look, India, this is a problem you're having. And to be fair, a lot of people in India didn't know how big of a problem they're having, and now they do. I think what we have done is that we have undone decades worth of marketing for whitewashing the image of Hinduism around the world as this peaceful, non-violent, accepting ideology. I think we have undone that in 3 days, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's getting news coverage. It's getting mainstream news coverage, right? So I mean, if anybody, like, you know how people, if anybody wants to have a clear, show a clear record for why this is not the case, they could just refer to this. Now it's like, it's going to be there. And I'm going to just, like, I'm not even going to ask these people to stop, you know, just come at me. It's fine. It's fine. I can take it. And I will, I have no issue with this. I'll just I'll highlight it to the rest of the world when you do it. John is saying, does it make sense to make public the threats or the identities of the threateners or forward to police somewhere, either in their countries or yours? I don't think so. Yeah, I think, like, I mean, there's so many of them. And second of all, the people that have actually went and done, like, the CAV vigilante justice people, the people that actually taken action, they go free. The police doesn't even go after them. So what do you think their chances are for people going after, in India, going after people that are just sending online death threats, right?
Yeah, the CAV vigilante people are actually supported by politicians. They have state support in a lot of cases, right? So
right,
that as well. But yeah, so this is what it is, I guess. Yeah, you know, it's just really, really, really important to blasphemize, to normalize blaspheming overall. This, you know, blaspheming, which is criticizing these sort of fairy tales and these religions that people are willing to kill and die for. And you're killing and dying for these things, and then you can't say anything about them. If there was anything else, that people were killing and dying for, it would be up for scrutiny. It always is. It always is up for scrutiny. And this is, it's a double standard. Mm. It's completely a double standard. You can satirize, you can mock, you can do anything on any other topic. You just can't do it on this. I mean, and everything, you see it all over the place. You see it with Islam. That's what we talk about here the most. I mean, countless examples. See with, like, you know, the Catholic Church, everything that they've been doing. If there was a company that was doing the kind of things that the Catholic Church did, child molestation, then, you know, they would have been shut down. They would have been, like, jailed. There would have been mass arrests and crackdowns on it. But that's just now not how it works. They still get to keep their tax exempt status. They still get to keep on continuing. There's no legal consequences. Like, they actually, I mean, this is the amazing thing. They want legal consequences against Armin, who posted a flattering cartoon of a goddess. That's it, on social media. That's all he did. They want legal consequences against him. But direct death threats towards him, threats of violence, right, that are actually, these things are, there's no legal consequences for stuff like this. Because you kind of brought it upon yourself. That's what they say.
Oh, by the way, I didn't finish mentioning, like, okay, so after all of that, it led to, my name was trending in India, Armin was trending, and atheism was trending. So Muhammad Hijab, basically, in his fight against, you know, atheists, he managed to get atheism trending in the second most populated country in the world. So thank you, Muhammad Hijab, for that. But I also want to mention that... but one thing else I've noticed is that a lot of people in India have no clue what freedom of expression means, because, you know, every time people come at them and tell them, like, guys, cut it out. Why are you, like, this is disgusting. You're going after this man's family and all of that. You see, like, a wave, like, every time somebody comes and defends this, you see, like, 100 replies. Like, so many people, like, responding to it. Freedom of expression. He said, like, oh, Armin is saying that Armin. First of all, I never mentioned freedom of expression. I think they just assumed that that would be my defense, right? Because, you know, they're going against the cartoon, and they're like, well, Armin says freedom of expression, so he can post a cartoon. So we have freedom of expression to go after his mother, because this goddess is our mother, right? So we are free to go after your mother, because you went after our mother. So they keep saying freedom of expression. So, like, what's wrong with it? Like, oh, look at pornographic images of your mother, and this is freedom of expression, right? So why are you crying? Aren't you for freedom of expression? Why are you complaining? You shouldn't complain. You should just take it, freedom of expression. And, like, you morons, like, this is, like, somebody needs to tell them that what freedom of expression is. Like, did I file a lawsuit against you guys? Did I, like, I didn't, you guys filed a lawsuit against me. Did I stop? I didn't, like, if people are calling you out for disgusting behavior, that is not denying your freedom of expression. They think like freedom of expression means that you don't get to call them out as vile and disgusting, you know, you call out their vile and disgusting behavior. They're like, oh, you can't complain because you're claiming that you should have freedom of expression. Yeah, okay, fine. Do all of it. I'm just highlighting it. Like, oh, Armin, why are you crying? Why are you highlighting this? You should just take it. Freedom of expression. That's your thing. I'm like, yeah, okay. I'm not stopping. Go ahead. Keep doing it. You're shooting yourself in the foot. You have no idea. You are doing my job. Like, you guys have no idea. You're basically doing my work for me. Okay. I'm just highlighting what you guys are doing. And I'm an anti-theist activist. And you guys have demolished the reputation of Hinduism more than I could have ever done in a million lifetimes by myself. You have no idea. You are playing on my side. You're doing my work for me. Me highlighting it is not crying and telling. Me highlighting is just telling the world, like, just look at this. That's all I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So again, my line is, this is the concept that people need to understand. And it seems like very few people in India understand this. Freedom of expression doesn't mean freedom from consequences. Freedom of expression means freedom from legal consequences. Unlike what you guys are doing, which is legally trying to stop me, like you're trying to bring government.
Which you can't, by the way.
They're tweeting at Trump. Do you know that, Ali? They're tweeting at Trump. They're asking Trump to stop me.
Oh, they love to, because they think of they think of Trump as their leader, because you know I've seen people do this with Trump and Netanyahu. That, you know, you are our leader. We look at you. We always follow you. There's people. There are Hindutva people who actually say this stuff. Trump. There was a, remember the guy who was worshiping Trump?
Yes, I remember. Yeah, we covered it on Nation's Republic.
Yeah, that's actually not uncommon. Like, in terms of, like, no, nobody's that overt when they build shrines to him, but they actually do look at him that way because there is a conflict. A lot of the sort of the Hindutva nationalist type people, they look at Trump as like the white man who is, they have an inferiority complex, so they actually look at him as a guide. Almost like a spiritual and a guy, and they're very, very happy he's in power. So there is this, you know. So I have to ask you, you know, our own, you know, Muslim reformer Tariq Fatah. You know, guys, familiar with Tariq Fatah? So Tariq Fatah is this guy who started out. He wanted Muslim reform, right? So he wanted to. He was very, very supportive of the Danish cartoonists, very supportive of all these people who draw cartoons and blaspheme against Islam, big supporter of Asia Bibi, you know, who was subject to the blasphemy laws of Pakistan and all of this stuff.
But before you continue, can I respond to this question? Vasund Hara is saying, can you respond to OP India's coverage on this? I will make a live stream on that, but thank you for that question. Go ahead, Ali.
Right. So Tariq Fatah has always been against this, you know, okay, we shouldn't. Blasphemy against Islam should be normalized. And, you know, this is not something that's a threat to me as a Muslim. He still identifies as a Muslim, even though he's obviously not, right? He's not a believing Muslim. He just uses it so he can use that as a launching pad to say things that nobody else really agrees with him on in his own community. And he goes for where the likes are, where all the social media likes are. And that, you know, so Armin, like you and I get a lot of, well, you, I guess, used to get a lot of support from Hindu nationalists who really loved the way that we criticize Islam. They started following him a lot, and he really, really got into it. So he started kowtowing to them, and he became sort of a Hindutva type guy himself. And so you would expect him to be consistent on this and to come to your defense. Like, he came to the defense of the cartoonists. Like, he came to the defense of Charlie Hebdo. Like, he came to the defense of the Danish cartoonists and everybody else. But what has his response been? He called you a racist, right?
Right.
And he called you a racist in a tweet that was racist against Iranians?
Yeah. Well, actually, I should bring it up. Do you want to bring it up and read it?
Okay, I'll have to look for it, but if you have it handy.
No, I don't have it. I don't have it ready, but they bring it up and I could talk about it. But let me tell you.
Yeah, explain.
Call me a racist for saying a Hindu goddess was sexy. And, you know, I quoted it and it was like, this gives a new meaning to Blue Lives Matter. But I don't understand. Like, I have no idea how it kicked. I'm going to do a live stream on that as well. I'm going to call it Tariq Fatah is a moron. That's what I'm going to name that live stream. But that is like, let me tell you about what Tariq Fatah is doing. I know what he's thinking. Okay. So, yeah, you know, the reason why the Hindus, what people like Trump, is because he went after, you know, and he had the Muslim ban, and he's like anti-immigration, and like they think like he's appealing to like the nationalists, just like the Hindu nationalists want to do that as well. Like, so they think like he's basically, and that's why Hindu nationalists in India, they love Israel as well. Like the far right and the right wing parties in Israel, because they think like this is exactly the model that we want to implement in India, right? But again, this is why they also love Tariq Fatah, and this is why they loved us ex-Muslims for a while. They didn't like me for a very long time. They were like, Armin, why can't you be like a posted prophet? He just focuses on Islam. Why are you like, why do you have to sometimes? Because sometimes I used to take jabs at Hinduism here and there, and I had a Hindu for following, and they really hated it every time I did that. And every time I did that, they kept on mentioning, Armin, be like a posted prophet, focus on Islam, right? And now that apostate prophet, and not just now, a while back again, apostate prophet like realized how crazy these people are, like not again, hashtag not all. And he posted like they lost the apostate prophet, and now they lost every single ex-Muslim, okay? What I'm really proud of the ex-Muslim community out there right now, because you have no idea how lucrative and tempting it would be right now to be the only ex-Muslim that is going to be like, okay, you guys want an ex, because they love the ex-Muslims, and you could now be the token ex-Muslim for the Hindutva that is like anti-Islam, that doesn't talk about Hinduism, right? Imagine if you're losing every single ex-Muslim, and you're just that one guy, just that one ex-Muslim that you could bank on, they're like, okay, this guy is not going to shit on Hinduism. This guy is our guy that we will focus on to go after Islam. But they don't have a single one of them. Even though it's very tempting and it's very lucrative, could be tempting to some people, to some YouTubers. Like, look, Abdullah Samir is obviously not going to do that. Apostate prophet, they don't have a apostate prophet. They're calling out this crap out. They went out against the Hindutva and call, you know, when they saw what happened after I posted that. He did that. Who else? Harris Sultan. Maryam Namazi just came out just today. Sarah Haider, she did that. Like every single one of them, every single ex-Muslim popular content creator, ex-Muslim out there, is at you. They're like, so they don't have a single token ex-Muslim that they could celebrate. They really wanted a token ex-Muslim that they could use against Islam, and this is what we realized for a very. For it's been a while, like we know about this about them, that they're not anti-Islam. Okay, these Hindutva people are not anti-Islam; they're anti-Muslim, right? And we didn't want to be used by these people for their bigotry, right? And this is what where Tariq Fatah comes in, because he wants to.
I got it.
Let me tell you why does he come in here? Because he is now going and panels and videos and, you know, making content, telling people, like telling the Hindutva, like, guys, this was your mistake. These ex-Muslims, they're still Muslim, okay? They're like, they have still ties to their barbaric backward ideologies, right? Again, I even see this from some other people, from even some Americans and British people, like, hey, Armin, I have this question. I don't know if I like your view on this. Are you sure this is not your Islamic upbringing that is influencing your behavior? And I'm like, shut the fuck up. No, it doesn't. It's the exact opposite. Like a lot of people are like, oh, Armin, why are you saying like, oh, this is like this Hindu goddess I'm saying is sexy. This must be your perverted mind of, this must be your influence from Islam that makes you say a goddess is sexy. I'm like, shut the fuck up. I'm when I was a Muslim, I was sex negative. Like, you're fucking, like, you, like, even Americans or even people from UK are telling me this. Like, yeah, I'm actually more sex positive than you right now because I left Islam and I'm more of a liberal than you would ever be. That's why I have no problem. When I see somebody sexy, I could acknowledge that they're sexy and I'm not ashamed about that. And your sex negativity on this is more Islamic than me being able to be honest with what I'm describing with what I'm seeing. Okay. So maybe shut the fuck up. Okay. So yeah. And when I was a Muslim, I would be ashamed of having feelings like that. Now I'm not. Now I could express it openly. This is my ex-Muslim speaking, not my Islam speaking. And in fact, shut the fuck up, Hindutva. This, they're going around and calling me pervert and everything like that just because I acknowledge at objectively, I know this is a joke, it's not objective, but an objectively sexy image of a goddess, me calling that sexy, they're going around and saying, oh, Armin is a pervert. Really? That's perversion in your mind? And you guys, seriously, you guys are sexually suppressed. You know, they're calling you, that's a popular thing right now. A lot of Hindu women out there are like, oh, Armin is a pervert, just for saying that their goddess is sexy, right? But again, this is what I say is like, they keep saying, oh, Armin, your Islam is showing. They're saying like, oh, this is Muslim blood. It's a Muslim blood. They want to say that they're ex-Muslims, but no, they'll always be a Muslim. And say, once a jihadi, always a jihadi. Once a Muslim, always a Muslim. That's what they're saying, right? And it's funny because they're saying this is your Islam is showing. And the ironic thing about that is that it's your Islam that is showing, okay? Because Hinduism, traditionally, was a very sex-positive religion. I mean, these people invented Kama Sutra for fucking sex, right? And their gods were very sex-positive. And even the Kali was a sex symbol, okay? So, I mean, tantric sex, all came from your fucking land, right? What are you talking about? And the reason why they're so sex-negative right now is because of the influence of Islamic colonialism. This is your culture has switched. You guys are so sex negative because of that. So when they say to me that, oh, Armin, your Islam is showing, I'm like, no, motherfuckers, your Islam is showing. This is these Hindutva people that hate Islam and Muslims so much, they have no idea how Muslim, this is your Islam. You are being Muslim right now. Your Hinduism, by the way, I'm not excusing Hinduism, just to be clear, because even back in the day when Hinduism was sex positive, and even if it is sex positive among many Hindus today, it still has its own problem. It's still superstition. It's still karma. I still have a problem with karma. I still have a problem with reincarnation. So I'm not excusing Hinduism. I'm like, oh, this is all Islam. And look at Armin. Because I noticed some Muslims were saying like, oh, look, Armin, even when he goes after Hinduism, he has to blame Islam. No, Hinduism has its own very unique problems. But this is Islam, okay? This whole sex negativity part, this comes from British colonialism, but also mostly from Islamic colonialism.
Well, actually, yeah, and if they really wanted to go full Islam, then if you wanted to do something, what you would do if you wanted to do like an Islamic based insult, right? And you wanted to say something about the goddesses, you would have put a hijab or a burqa on them, which you did. I am going to do that.
Actually, I'm going to do that. I'm going to make a Hindu goddess in a hijab, but still sexy, like hijab on her head, but maybe like naked, like semi-naked in the rest of her body, like something like that. Because when I suggested to the Hindus, because the Hindus were so okay, by the way, they think this is me calling the gods sexy, they thought that's misogynist. Again, this is so ironic, hypocritical of them, because that's actually them being misogynist, right? Because they're so protective, like they think like they own their women. You know what I mean? Like if I said, oh, look at Krishna, which kind of God? Look at Shiva. Look at his abs. Oh, my God. Look at how sexy this is. These people would not be losing their minds like this, right? It's just when you do that with a goddess, they're like, oh, my God. Our women are it's like they treat them like just things that they own that you're like, you know.
You should have you tweeted about that? That if I did this, if I did this and if it showed a male god with really cool abs, I'd be like, this guy's really hot, right? And then nobody would say anything about that. But when it's you say the same thing about a woman, then it completely a female goddess, then they lose their minds, which is actually very, very similar to the way that Islamic.
This is male honor. This is like male honor. This is their misogyny showing, and they think that they caught my misogyny for just say calling something an image that is objectively sexy, just calling it sexy.
Yeah, you know, if you could reason with Hindutva nationalists, there would be no Hindutva.
What? Okay, let me actually be fair to them. I did have a discussion with the Hindutva nationalists right after all of this, and it was a very pleasant discussion. So. Let's just—I mean—I record that is available as well. So I don't want to generalize. Okay, so
I'm trying to share the screen. Is it sharing it or no? No, it's not.
Oh no, share it again. I will make it pop.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Here it is.
So there you go. This is a Tariq Fatah tweet, and I'm going to read it out. This is to you, Armin. Your attack on Hinduism, mocking Hindu goddesses as sexy, is racist, Armin. That's racist. So calling Hindu goddesses sexy is racist. I doubt if you as an Iranian are acquainted with the civilization of Bharat. Bharat means India. Please stick to raking your own people who are drenched in hydrogen peroxide as fake blondes and reconstructed nose lines. Yeah, and then he CC'd Kangana Ranaut, who's a big like sort of actress in India, who would also criticize you. This is like...
I mean, didn't he supports Charlie Hebdo, right? So what's the difference between this what I posted and that? Like, why? How is that not? How's those other things not racist? If this is racist,
He's tribal. He's tribal. So these are kind of his people now, right? These are the people who gave him the likes. These are the people when he lost all of his credibility. He became pretty much a joke here in Canada. Like everybody talks behind his back. He became, among the Muslim community, he's not even taken seriously. He's taken as a joke. He's not taken seriously by ex-Muslims. Even the other sort of the reform crew, some of his, and I feel bad naming them because I guess I won't name them because I know them as well. They come, everybody makes fun of him behind his back, his own reform crew. It's amazing. So they just kind of
roll. How is it like? Can we actually try to steelman him? How is me calling a Hindu goddess sexy racist in any way? Like, can we at least try? Because usually I try to steelman people. You know how I play devil's advocate sometimes?
I'm
at a loss here.
I am completely at a loss too. So I think I have no idea. He's like, you know, if you're criticizing Hindu goddesses, I mean, so guys, remember this. This is not that, you know, we have it in for Hinduism or that we have a huge, like, specific thing. This is what this thing's about. We have had people, we have talked about here about Islam. We have had an ex-Jehovah's Witness. We talked about that. We've had an ex-Scientologist, a really prominent one, Ron Miscavige, on this podcast. We've talked about that. We've talked about these ultra-Orthodox Jews. We had Ari Hershkovitz here to talk about that. We have talked pretty much every religion, right? Ex-Catholics, ex-Protestants, everybody has been here, and we have talked about it. We've even called out the problems with atheists. We had a whole episode of that with Seth Andrews. I mean, we talk about the problems with everything. The only thing is that I think now, okay, which religion is the one, religious community is the one that if you talk against them, they go the most apeshit? We now have a winner. Mm. Okay, we thought that it would be Islam. We thought it might be something else, but it is this. It is Hindu fund. This is what it is.
Well, let's be clear though. Offline consequences is still. Wait, bring that tweet. I want to mention something else about it. Bring it back up. I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to mention another hypocritical thing about it. So we are, you know, bringing up multiple layers of hypocrisy. So we mentioned how it's hypocritical for like not calling out the Charlie Hebdo cartoon as racist, but also he's calling me racist here. And what does he do immediately after, Ali? Right after you calling me racist,
he starts taking basically saying that Iranian people are drenched in hydrogen peroxide and fake blonde, reconstructed nose lines.
So the level of self awareness in this one tweet is like below zero. Like he just right after calling me racist, he ends up saying something racist about Iranian people. So there's that. I'm going to dedicate an entire video to this. Okay, so that's about the tweet. But I also want to mention, so we don't need the tweet anymore. Let me remove it. Okay, so
you should actually call it the atheist Tariq Fatah is a moron, because that will actually drive him a lot more nuts than anything else, because he is an atheist. Anyway, I'll stop. So,
no, but I was saying, you know, I think that we have to be fair, though. When it comes, for example, to terrorism, global terrorism, the number one champion by a wide, wide margin is Islam. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just let, like, yeah, so when it comes to, like, apparently the online reaction and the campaigns and the abuse and going after people's families and filing legal cases, if we are focusing on that, it seems like the champion of that behavior are the Hindutva people, okay? So yeah. way bit more than, much more than Muslims, okay?
Yeah,
but when it comes to actually, like, hold on, but when it comes
like that for everything else, right? We are against, like, the whole idea is that why do we have to caveat this? I mean, we have had a 3-year record on this podcast of talking about what you're saying incessantly, right? So why should we, why must we caveat it? Why do we have to bring that in every time we're talking about something else? It's the same thing, right?
No, I just want to make sure, because we're saying that they're the Hindutva people, if you want to say they're the worst right now, we are very specific about what we are saying and in which department they're the champions right now, okay? Because we're not, because everybody hearing this, they could be like, what are you talking about? Like, if when it comes to terrorism, you know, when it comes to offline consequences, obviously, you know, you need to be worried about Muslims, not about Hindus. And that would be fair. That's fair. That's the data backs that up. And again, if somebody is watching this in the United States or in North America or Western Europe, and like, oh, Armin, what are you talking about? The main terror threats in the United States, for example, the number one is the far right groups. Like, yeah, this is a US-centric point of perspective, that when I say the number one is Islam and you think that I'm talking about the United States, okay? Yes, if we focus on the United States, far-right groups, terrorism done by far-right groups is bigger than Islamic groups, okay? I'm talking about a global perspective. And the fact that you imagine, like, how could this be true? I've seen the data that the far-right groups are higher. You have to go think, like, oh, why do I have such a U.S.-centric perspective if that's what I thought right after you said that, okay? So, yeah. So I just want to be clear about what we're claiming and what we're not claiming.
Okay. So I want to move on and ask you about something else. You know, for the long, we've been hearing for a while that India is the sort of the rape capital of the world. Like, it's one of the worst places for women to be. You know, there is and this also includes, you know, any place there's honor culture, like Saudi Arabia, like Egypt, like Pakistan, you know, these are Afghanistan. These are all terrible places for women to be. But India is on that list. India is the, you know, it's not a Muslim majority country. It's been on that list. The gang rape of Nirbhaya, the absolutely brutal thing that happened on a bus, you know, where a bunch of people got together. And I mean, there's a whole Netflix show on that. And it's actually disturbing just talking about what happened. And you hear cases like this all the time. I, you know, have heard from people from India, like, especially men who defend, they say, no, you know, India is not like that. This is all propaganda. Like, the highest rape, you know, statistics are really in Sweden. You know, this stuff is worse. And all of these other countries and Muslim majority countries is way worse and so on. But the stats have just shown that India has this epidemic of honor culture. Is one of the places where, you know, aside from Muslim majority countries, I mean, child marriage, marrying children is a very common thing. So it's just been up in the air. This is a really, really bad place for women. Now, going by the kind of responses that you got, it's, you know, Islamic sort of jihadists and fundamentalists and dogmatists, they say all kinds of horrendous and vile things about women. I mean, you have experienced that. I've experienced that. Anytime they want to go after you, they'll come after the women. But what we've seen here from this crowd, the people who got upset, the Hindu nationalists, is, you know, is that on steroids? It's like far beyond. It's so creative, and again, it's vile as hell. So creative in how vile it is. It's stuff that I didn't even think of. Like, they put some serious, serious effort into.
Yeah. They're still at it. They're still at it.
Oh, yeah, they're still at it. I mean, this is the only thing I see.
That I can't even talk about, Ellie. There's some stuff that I can't even talk about.
That's so amazing to me. We've always been able to talk about everything here. This is probably the first time that there are things that we, when we're thinking, we're like, okay, you know, this is, we have pretty high thresholds, but pretty low thresholds, but when it comes to that, like that, this is probably, it's a little bit, you know, we're not going to bother with this. Anybody who wants to see it can go online and see it. I think that one of the things that you should do is you should take a lot of these tweets that you got in response that are the most representative.
Can somebody else do that? Because I don't, I'm already dealing with so much.
Yeah, yeah. I think I can work with Susanna if you're up for it. I can work.
Susanna, I've given Susanna too much. Susanna is like actively trying to doing so much work to protect our fan and, you know, base in India. So
but she,
her hands are full.
So we'll figure out how we can go about it. But I think what needs to be done is, like, you know, just screenshots of these. Like, we can take a few hundred of them, right? It'll take some time. And just we should actually have an article on Atheist Republic showing.
Oh, that would be. Oh, Ali, if you write an article about this, I will publish it everywhere.
Oh, okay. Let's do it then.
Yeah.
See if I can do it. I would love to do it.
Can you do that? That would be amazing. If you actually cover, if you could document what happened.
Yeah, I remember with Ex-Muslim because when that was trending, I wrote an article and it went.
Ooh, yes, everywhere. Yes.
I had screenshots of all the tweets, and I think that that's the thing. I won't embed them this time. I'll just put all of the screenshots because I don't know.
No, yeah, because they're being reported and being removed. Don't embed the tweets. Put the screenshots.
Right.
A lot of them, I should have screenshotted more of them because, I'm grateful to the Hindu people that went and reported the death threats, but most of the death threats, like, didn't survive that long because there were obvious death threats, right? The ones that survived were the pornographic images of my family, those, like, and also telling people telling, you know, mentioning how much they enjoy to do different things to my family. Those are still standing because I don't think that violates Twitter's terms of service. But the death threats, they had a short lifespan on Twitter. So if you see any of them, screenshot them.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I think I can do that. So I'm going to have to go through it. If there's, I'm going to, Susanna, I know you're really, really busy, but if you can send me, because there's a lot of stuff I must have missed.
She's going to quit. She's going to quit if you give her more work.
I don't know who to talk to because I want to make sure I don't miss anything because I don't know how to access all of them. But anyway, we'll figure that out offline. So we'll do that. But what do you think about this? The you know, when they say it's the rape capital of the world and the kind of things that you've been seeing just in terms of the misogyny, what was your reaction to that when you saw what extreme it went to?
I don't want to tell you my reaction because I don't want to give these people something to be happy about. Okay, but I can't tell you some things, but I'm telling you, but I could tell you this. It doesn't really matter what my reaction was initially. What I could tell you is that.
But what are your thoughts about it? Have you made any
inference? For the first time, I thought, is this worth it? Okay, given some of the things that happened that I can't mention. Okay, but my answer now is yes, it's worth it. Okay, fuck all you all. I'm coming for all your sacred cows, every single one of them. You thought that was blasphemous. You haven't seen blasphemies, motherfuckers. That's what I'm thinking right now. Okay? So, and please, like, blaspheme with me. Okay? Like, if it's safe for you, let's normalize the fuck out of this. Like, this is, we cannot let people, I mean, this is like, they're not just, they're not intimidating people just in their own countries. They're managing to do it outside of their borders as well. And we have to teach everybody a lesson that you cannot draw red lines around us based on your values. Your values are your values, motherfuckers. You don't get to set barriers for other people, right? This needs to backfire on them. They need to regret even considering limiting other people's expression, okay? And I mean, I'm going to do that. I'm just hoping that there's, you know, and most of my support is coming from people that are taking even more risk than me, right? I'm getting a lot of support for people who shouldn't be supporting me. You know, the vast majority of the support that I'm getting right now is from people that should stay low right now. That's the support that I'm getting. Why am I not getting support from the people that do not would not suffer such consequences?
Yeah.
But again, thank you. I don't want to sound ungrateful to the people from India that are showing me that much support. I just want to let them know that they don't have to. Like, they could just like sit this one out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next thing I have to ask you is that what do people like, you know, for example, like, you know, the other conversations we have, I think people are very comfortable sharing it because, you know, we say things that a lot of other people can't because there's risks, you know, some people are teachers in schools, they can get fired, parents can call in and you know, all that. What should just regular people do to
blaspheme everything? Yeah.
My question is this, that's what I'm trying to tell you. That if some people do, for instance, what you do, someone sort of desecrates a Quran or rips it up or whatever, and they are a teacher in a private school and that's what their livelihood is, even though they're full solidarity with you, you know, they don't have a way after that to pay the bills for their family. So,
yeah, don't do it then.
Yeah, then no, but they still want to show solidarity. They feel strongly about this and they're like, I really, really want to support this guy. He's going out and speaking for so many of us. What do I do? How do I don't know.
I don't know. I right now I need people that can and blaspheme without consequences. That's what I need right now. For the rest of people, I don't know. No, you can support us. You can support us on Patreon. So make us help make more art. I have a designer right now. I took $200 with Susanna's permission. Susanna okayed this. Our first design of Cali is coming out. I only spent $200 on it. So that the first drafts I'm looking at, I'm not going to show the first drafts to people because I don't want them to go and, but it's going to look good, classy and decent. And I'm going to spend, here's the thing. First, I'm going to start spending, every month we're going to design a new, blasphemous Hindu related art. And then I'm going to do, hadith. Like we're going to make like Sahih Bukhari, like the most ridiculous hadith that is in Sahih Bukhari. What we're going to do is we're going to make comic strips out of them. So that's what I'm going to do. So if you guys want to support these projects like this, you can support us on Patreon and that would be that those funds will go towards making, and you know, we'll find other ways to blaspheme against everything that people can claim to be sacred. I mean, if it's sacred, and if you guys consider it sacred and you guys have your own rules for it, we wouldn't even blaspheme against it, right? If it's something that you just don't do and you're not demanding other people to do it. But if you want to use intimidation tactics and if you want to have blasphemy laws or anything like that, we want to basically break, you know, ram through these barriers that you created just to like make a case for for why freedom expression of ideas should not have no limitations, right? We're going to show to the world that we can do this, and to encourage more people to say like, you know what, this is not your rules, this is their rules, and you don't have to play by their rules, you don't have to respect their rules. You can respect their rules if they're not demanding you to respect their rules, but I think you should disrespect your rules if they're making it mandatory for you to respect their rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's one of the answers that you gave really works. I mean, for those people, again, you know what I was saying was people who have jobs and they don't want to lose their livelihoods. If you have jobs and if you're making money, even if you donate a little bit towards this, and nobody has to do anything. But I'm actually really earnestly asking for this. Like if these projects are things that you support, but you can't go out and overtly show solidarity because it's risk to your job or risk to your, you know, issues or your family relationships or whatever it is, or if you're in a place where it's not safe, then, you know, what you can do is you can help in this way. You can share the things that Armin's doing. You can donate to these projects. There's a lot of things that you can do. So in that sense. You can make other milder things that you can stomach, like, you know, just basic academic Quranic criticism, like what Abdullah Samir does. You can go and you can support that. You can share that. You can show solidarity in that way. So there's many different ways that you can do it. But what's really important is that we do it. We have to do it. But I want to remind everybody that, you know, when you say anything that's sacred, you're not just talking about religion. You're talking about things when people come out and say, you can't do this and you can't do that.
Like, that's why I go after the woke. That's why I go after the woke cult as well. And Ali, I have an idea. By the way, I didn't.
I was going to say something before you.
Okay, go.
It's not just a woke crowd that you've gone after, but you've also said when Donald Trump tweeted that, you know, burning the flag, the United States flag, should be a crime.
Yes.
Armin actually came out and said, if you go out and burn a U.S. flag, go out and do it, because nobody should be able to tell you not to do it. And that's the whole idea. Yes. People should not be anything that people are paying for that is completely harmless, where there's no victims involved. No victims. No victims involved in this. Okay? No physical harm to any human being. Okay? And it's just pure freedom of expression. Anything like that that people try to criminalize, we should go out of our way to try and do. And by the way, a little while ago, a few years ago, I think when India knocked down their ban on homosexuality, I remember doing something similar where I posted a picture of Krishna, because Krishna is very sort of effeminate, and this is obviously politically incorrect, but I said something like, you know, I said it as a joke. I was like, how is it that the country with the gayest looking gods, you know, had a problem with homosexuality for so long? It was a joke, and I had a, you know, picture of Krishna there, and a very similar response, not as nuts as what you got for this, but it was pretty similar, and it was just a joke. And that's, I think, one of the first times I clued into the fact that there is something there. There's a lot of triggerability with this crowd as well.
How do you say this name?
It's a Gnostic coward. Gnostic actually means, I think it means atheist in Hindi.
All right. So he or she's asking, can I sponsor one art? Yeah. I mean, first of all, before I say how you can sponsor one art, please do not sponsor one art if you're struggling in any way financially. Okay. But yeah, if you go to atheistrepublic.com, there's a donate tab. So I think it's a support or donate at the tab at the top. That there's many different ways suggested there. But thank you so much for even considering. But please do not think that you have to. Okay, the art will be made. Okay, we are getting a lot of support for it. But thank you for even considering. Ali, I was gonna say this because the enemies of enlightenment, right? Mm-hmm. The people that are against enlightenment values and the freedom of expression being the most valuable, the most important enlightenment value of all, right? The six of them are Islam, Christianity, far right, Western far right ideologies, woke dogma, Hindutva, and the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. Those are the six, the greatest threat to enlightenment, right?
Yeah.
So right now, I always said, like, I'm going to go after all six of them, but I didn't know that I'm going to be I'm going to be seeing a backlash from three of the six at the same time right now, the woke, the Hindutva, and Islam. So I was like, before I saw how big this backlash was going to get, I was even considering going out and now do the fourth one. I was thinking of, like, how could I normalize blasphemy, what far right, Western far right people would consider blasphemy. And I was asking on Twitter what they suggest they do. You know, one thing I know they hate a lot, which is actually, I think it's a good thing, is race mixing. I think, you know, I'm in favor of race mixing. I think it's a great thing. And I think they hate it, but they're not, I don't know if they're triggered by it as much as they are. Right. But one thing that I think that would actually normalize, like something that I could normalize what they consider blasphemy and keep it with this whole art project, do with the art, like keep it within the art project that we're doing. Again, we're going to have one art after on Atheist Republic. Once we reach 150 patrons, after that, we're going to have one single art every single month. And each one of these arts is going to have, like, it's going to be about Hindu goddesses and gods, but we're going to like make it so that we're blaspheming against some other sacred cow as well. Like, so that's why we're going to have one with Krishna and Muhammad, right? But what I thought is that some people suggested that we have goddesses from, like, a lesbian kiss between a Hindu goddess and a Norse mythology, like a Viking gods of, like, Vikings and stuff, right? you know, that would be like they suggested some goddesses from that. And I thought like there's not that many people that would be feel like that's not solving any problem. There's no limitation with Norse mythology goddesses. But then I thought that suggestion gave me an idea. Like, you know, the far right people, what they hate is that anything that might be encouraging diversity. Yeah. So I thought, what if I took the, you know, Norse mythology gods and goddesses that they love and they see it as their symbol, and I just made black versions of them, like, you know, like black Thor or black, I don't know, whatever, right? So like make LGBT friendly and black Norse mythology gods and goddesses, right? I don't know. I thought like maybe that would be a good thing to try, because they would consider that like, oh my god, this is like a whole, like, you're ruining our culture, Western civilization is falling apart, everything has to be black or like LGBT, like this is something that I've seen, like I consume a lot of their content, and that's what makes them fall apart. Like when you take something that is ancient or sacred to them and you just try to put what they consider to be like woke, and you try to make it LGBT or trans friendly or, you know, minority, like representation of minority groups. So if we take like this is something that I haven't seen anybody go after, because that is, they use pagan symbols and they love, like, because this is a religion, these are religious symbols that were purely white. Like, for example, this is why some far right people always wanted to make Christianity seem like it was a white religion, but obviously they fail at that so much because it came from the Middle East. And that's why so many far right people just focus on pagan symbolism, especially in Norse mythology. And that's so again, if we try to include, make it that more representative of minority, like have black Thor and black, I don't know what their goddesses are called, I think that would be interesting.
I like the idea of actually.
Somebody saying it's been done. Okay, on Netflix.
That's great. Yeah, it just needs to be done again. But I really like the idea of putting like mythological figures and religious figures together, just to show that there's no difference. Like they're the same. Like the mythology of the religions of today are going to be the mythology of tomorrow. The mythology of the past is the religions of the past are the mythology of today. I mean, that's how it works. So I actually like that mixing of it. But anyway, so
Anne is saying every time I write or say the word God, it's blasphemous based on how I was raised in Judaism. I was taught to say Hashem and write G-D, so not even write the word God. Just watch Netflix, it's all be down there. Okay, but I'm gonna, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the God thing with the fill in the blank, I always found that funny, because it's just you know, as if God can't fill in the blank, you know. Yeah. you can't do it. Like, I just find that it's just so bizarre. But people do dumb things. Like, the religion just makes people do dumb things. It makes them wear dumb hats. It makes Catholics, like, who dress in robes, like the Vatican, you see them, they're dressed in robes and these flowery gowns and things like that. And then they talk about the problem with trans people and the degenerate morality of drag queens. And like, they're all dressed in, they're wearing dresses. All of them are wearing dresses. It's, you know, it's just, it's always been strange to watch. Right. It's always hilarious. So Anne Marin is saying, do people actually think of her like their mother? They're talking about the goddess Kali. I was very surprised by those comments and wondering if they meant it or they were just trying to make excuses. They actually love these goddesses and gods, just like, you know, they probably love them more than their parents. This is what happens, is they take these fictional characters and they're stand-ins for some sort of void that they have in them, you know, that this is a product of indoctrination, and they do revere them a lot more than human beings. You see this in Islam too, in Muslim families. A lot of times people will disown their kids. They won't speak to their kids. They will kill their kids because they love their religion way more than they love their kids. They will care. Honor killings are exactly that. They've got these religious values, these orders in the book. And, you know, because they feel like they have been, their kids have betrayed them by taking off their jobs and everything, they'll do honor killings. they will actually kill their own daughters. That's how strong this stuff is. People, as soon as your child is born, as soon as your child, your baby is born, if there is any time that you would think, oh, maybe there is a God, it's that moment when your child is born. Anybody who's been a father or mother knows that. And then for a parent to think, okay, my child is born, now let's go and start, and let's just go cut a piece off of his genitals or a piece off of her genitals. That kind of thinking shows how deep this is. People love these figures, these mythologies, and these fables and fairy tales way more than they love their family. They are willing to hurt their children. They're willing to harm innocent babies who are completely healthy and mutilate their genitals because this is something, because they love their religions way more. Even the ones who go secular, that's how strong it is. Even the ones that go secular still circumcised. I mean, it's circumcision is always an interesting topic to me because this exemplifies how far people are willing to go. So Vasundhara is saying Tariq Fatah is also infamous for peddling fake news about Muslims in India. Can I tell a quick Tariq Fatah story just to kind of show, I want to kind of show what kind of person he is, right? And what drives him and motivates him. And I'm happy to put the link to this here, is that I did some of my earliest interviews on Sun TV. Sun TV was the Canadian version of Fox. It's now defunct. Now it's disappeared. It didn't get enough ratings. So I'd been on there a few times. Tariq Fatah used to work there. And once they had a panel, which was, became a joke. It was one of the most hilarious things most people had seen. They had a panel about white privilege. So it was basically four or five white people, white guys sitting down talking about whether white privilege really exists. And they were saying it doesn't. And Tariq was sitting there alone saying that, yes, white privilege does exist. And he knows it. As a Muslim, as a brown man, he's been on the receiving end of it. So they asked him to make the argument. And, you know, I believe white privilege exists. If I was asked to make the argument, I could give a slew of arguments that people would relate to. This is the argument that Tariq Fatah started with. He showed shots, like, you know, they showed on TV. They said he took two of the guys on the panel. He showed their Twitter accounts. He's like, look at your Twitter accounts. See, you've got maybe 2,000, 3,000 followers and you're verified. And then he said, you're, quote, privileged by Twitter. And then he showed his own Twitter account. He's like, look at me. I've got 40,000 followers. At that time he did. He's like, but I'm not verified. I am not kidding. I'm not exaggerating. This is exactly what he said. He was so, and he used to talk about this all the time. He's like, why do I have so many followers and I'm not verified by Twitter? I have so many followers. This guy lives for his likes and his tweets and, you know, the retweets, and whether he's got verification status. I mean, he's basically he wants to be a Twitter cult of personality. And then what happened is that, you know, once, you know, he started calling out Islamic fundamentalists, calling out, like, in all of the stuff about Islam that he does, defending Charlie Hebdo. Who did he get the most support from? Where did he get the most likes? Where did he get the most appreciation, the most retweets? Same people that you and I did, Armin, right? A lot of these Hindutva people, Hindu nationalists, they came up. And then suddenly he started rediscovering his Indian heritage. He started talking about how any Pakistani person who denies their Indian and Hindu heritage, anybody who does, I mean, he called me a jihadi once. He called me a jihadi because there were these, I guess, these Hijabi girls that were kind of making fun of a Hindu goddess again. And I said something like, I was like, come on, guys, reject religion and embrace, you know, enlightenment, or embrace reality or something like that. And he just went nuts anytime you would criticize anything about the Hindutva people. And of course, you'd get loads of likes and loads of retweets and your notifications would be flooded. So that's what motivates this guy. So he has gone, he's like a chameleon. He's an ideological chameleon. And the thing, the environment that determines what color he's going to be and what shape he's going to take is the number of retweets and the number of likes he gets. Wherever he gets them from the most is the direction that he's going to go in. And everybody knows he's fickle like that. There's a very fundamentalist sort of narcissistic driver to him that way. So Nastic Coward is saying, India is extreme. They kill their daughters for marrying outside of their caste and cult.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, And you know, this is true actually of all honor societies. We call honor societies. I've mentioned here before that I grew up on a lot of Bollywood movies, and Bollywood movies, whenever they talk about rape, the term for it was izzat lootna. Usne meri izzat loot liya, and that basically means that they have stolen my honor. So the word for rape, the euphemism for rape that's very common is that, you know, to steal somebody's honor, as if the honor that you have is between your legs. And once you have taken that honor, you can never get it back. And that's why they rape, because they know that if they do that to a woman, they've destroyed her life. She's never going to have any honor ever for the rest of her life. That's the implication. That's how the culture works. And it's not just India. I mean, that's how a lot of these honor cultures work. And this is why we speak so much against the honor cultures. And that this is the honor culture, by the way, is one place where Islam and Hinduism are equivalent, completely equivalent, when it comes to their treatment of women. Lois Edwards is saying, hi, Lois. Somewhere in the New Testament, Jesus said to leave one's father, mother, etc., and follow him. That to be a Christian, one has to love Jesus more than their own family. I'll just say that I heard Nate Phelps speak about this once.
But I think that's in response to what you were saying earlier.
It is. Yeah, but I heard Nathan Phelps is the son of Fred Phelps, who was the founder of the Westboro Baptist Church. Mm. I heard about him speak about this very eloquently. His father used to beat the children and abuse the children based on the Bible. Based on passages in the Bible, okay? Again, just love the people who are very religious. They love their religion, their religious figures, like, much more than they love their own family, their own mothers, their own fathers, and real human beings. They love myths more than they love real human beings. It's anti-humanist. It's psychopathic. Matt Rose is saying, would you be willing to have Richard Spencer, Tariq Fatah in the podcast as a guest? Yeah. Richard Spencer, yes. I've talked about why I wouldn't want to talk to Robert Spencer. Richard Spencer is way worse than Robert Spencer, but I would rather actually talk to him because I think that he is an honest interlocutor. Like, whatever he is.
I want to talk to Robert Spencer as well.
I think he should.
No, but I want to talk to with you there because I don't know, like, he's going to come and say, well, your friend Ali Rizvi said this and this and this. And I don't know, like, I haven't been caught up with the with your back and forth. And I kind of don't, like, I don't know how to defend you if I don't know exactly what happened, right?
But I think it's been going on for years and I've already talked. Like, he's just not.
So can we do it? Can we not do it on this show on Secular Jihadists? No, you don't want to do that?
I don't want to do it on this show because I think it would be a waste of time. If you want to do a separate live stream somewhere and we want to get up there, that's okay. I just don't want to because in this show, I hope that people listen to this and they get something out of it. This would just be like an episode of Jerry Springer because I'm going to say things and he'll say, I never said that. He'll give me the exact quote. And then, you know,
but then he's going to say, if I invite him, he's going to say things about you and I don't know what to respond, how to respond, because I haven't dug into exactly what happened. You know what I mean? Like,
here's another reason that, so you bring up a good point. There's another reason why I don't think that we should, and I answered this in the Q&A before too, but here's another reason, is that anything that you talk to him about, the only people who are going to listen to that episode and get something out of it are the people who agree with him anyway. He has absolutely no reach beyond that crowd. And that even includes mainstream.
I don't know. So Richard Spencer, you just called Richard Spencer an honest, and you called him honest. What?
Yeah, I do. I think Richard Spencer is honest.
I don't think he's honest. Didn't you hear like his audio that came out that was leaked? It wasn't the way he talks publicly. So that doesn't.
Yeah, it's honest. Not. But whatever he says publicly is still in more nicely articulated version of the same principles. They are consistent. He's consistent. He is vile, okay? His views are ridiculous, but he's like Hakika Jew. Hakika Jew is way worse than Richard Spencer, than Robert.
Oh, by the way, Matt actually meant Robert Spencer, not Richard Spencer.
Oh, you did.
Well, you got the answer to both there, so that's good.
Tariq Fatah I'd have on, because I actually don't think that... I think Tariq Fatah, like, I think he is a chameleon, but I just find Tariq Fatah more entertaining. I think he's actually a lot more entertaining than Robert Spencer.
I don't know if he's going to accept. I'm going to do a live stream on him later today.
Yeah, let's do all the live streams on him, and then let's see if he accepts.
Yeah, but I'm titling that live stream Tariq Fatah is a moron. That's the title.
I think we should make that and then give the invitation to him, saying, "Would you like to come on Secular Jihad? please look at the view this video as a reference. We'd love you to come on." And then,
right, right. So we'll see if he will accept our invitation after I do that. But honestly, I bet you know what? I'm not holding back anymore, man. Like I did a video. I'm gonna call people out. Like I just did a video just like yesterday saying Muhammad Hijab had some takes on this whole backlash against me. I just made the title like, what do I do? Title? I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna call it. I'm just saying Muhammad Hijab is a moron, and I'm not like I'm not you know I'm not gonna sugarcoat this anymore. I'm gonna everybody that is has like shit takes on Twitter. I'm gonna dedicate an entire hour to them and tell people why they're being morons. Okay, so now the next one that's coming is Tariq Fatah. Tariq Fatah is a moron. That's the title of my next one.
Harris Sultan did a really really good thing about Tariq Fatah, and he wanted me to come on, but I couldn't because it was just really late at night at that time. But man, I mean, it was pretty good. And he did it in Urdu. So people who out there who can speak Urdu usually listen to that. Listen to Harris Sultan's like takedown of Tariq Fatah. But yeah, I think that should.
Yeah, I did a live stream in English with Harris Sultan as well, talking about this and everything else. Yeah. But yeah. Read Sarah's comment. Let's do last one. All Sarah's right. comment. And then after that, I'm going to go down.
Okay. Sarah is saying, I admire Armin for wanting to take on the world. I worry you might spread yourselves too thin, though. There's a lot of dark, messed up shit out there.
But if we are successful, the blowback will be less. Mark my words, a few years from now, I'm going to put sexy goddesses out there, and there's not going to be a reaction. I'm going to put sexy, very sexy goddesses out there, and people are going to, there's going to be nothing. It's going to be silence.
This is such an important point. So what people don't understand is a lot of times people say, what is the point? You're just provoking people. And they do that and you see this, the kind of reaction that you're getting, the kind of, yes, really vile stuff. I just looked at my thing and they're putting up pictures of my family members now, right? And all I did was like, I supported you. And I'm getting them seeing that in my comment threads. But what happens is you do this, you kind of take one for the team. It sucks, but the long-term effect, think about, and we talked about this before, the Danish cartoons of Muhammad first came out. It was shocking. It was freaky. And then what happened to the guy? There was a guy stabbed over it, right? The Theo Van Gogh. And, you know, there were so many associated things that happened that were terrible because people were very, very, very sensitive about it. They had never seen it before. And then everybody talked about how this is provocative. This doesn't need to be done. Charlie Hebdo, same thing, is provocative. Doesn't need to be done. 5 years after Charlie Hebdo, you put out a cartoon of Muhammad out there, no one cares. It really, really, like, truly, the amount of people that used to react to that and the way they used to react to it, Salman Rushdie, when he has to go into hiding for 10 years, just not the case anymore. And so short term, you get massive, massive opposition. But that's how desensitization works. That's how normalization works. I mean, remember when Trump first got elected, everyone was like, oh my God, we're not going to normalize this. But now it's only the guy's talking about injecting disinfectant. And we just take it like, oh, okay, well, that's what presidents do now. I guess, you know, they write op-eds about it. It's normalized. This is what happens. That's how desensitization works. It's a long-term process. You have to be patient. You have to have a long-term vision for it. And I think that's where, Armin, you do that with a tremendous, tremendous amount of tolerance. And skin that is really, really thick, despite what Tariq Fatah says about Iranians and their skins. They're doing pretty well.
I can do this last one comment by Matt, but that I said Sarah's comments is last, but let's do Matt's comment. That's one.
Matt is saying, plus bring the whole ex-Muslim gang, like atheist prof. What was it? Apostate prophet and Abdullah Samir. When you bring on Robert Spencer,
no, who he means he whom who are yeah, he corrected it. So, yeah, but I don't know. I think I like the idea of just bringing on. I don't know if this is going to be fun for our audience, but it will be fun for me if we just have like a round, like a live stream with every single. Like, imagine if we had a live stream with Sarah Haider, Yasmin Muhammad, Abdullah Samir, Harris Sultan, Apostate Prophet, Zara K, every single one of them. in one live stream at the same time. I mean, would be chaos. It wouldn't be interesting. We wouldn't be exchanging anything that would be interesting to anybody, but it would just be fun for me just to have an excuse to hang out with all of them, like everybody at the same time. Oh, Muhammad Sayyid. Sorry, Muhammad. Oh, my God. I forgot our beloved Muhammad Sayyid. Peace be upon him. So, yes, Muhammad Sayyid and, yeah, who else? Oh, my God. I shouldn't have done this. Because now I'm sure I forgot somebody, and people are like, how could – Abdullah Sami. I said Abdullah Sami, right?
I would add Jimmy Bungash and Faye to that too.
Gondal, Abdullah Gondal as well. Harris. Jimmy. God damn it. You should never do this. Because every time you're going to remember somebody, forget some. Huh?
I love Faye.
What happened?
Faye Rahman.
That's all right, let's go. Faye. I can't hear you.
Faye Rahman.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah, let's do that, everybody. Okay, cool. All right. Yeah, I'm sure we miss a whole bunch of people. There needs to be some limitation based on something, so we'll figure it out. But I don't think we're going to do it because it's not going to be an interesting episode anyways. I'm just, you know, ever since we did the Amsterdam thing, that was like one of the best times I've had in my life. I just wish like we could do it like again, but we won't be able to do it ever again. That was a one-time thing. Oh, MTM Shams, thank you so much, MTM Shams, yes, as well. Okay. All right, let's go now.
If you can get Muhammad Hijab on here.
Oh, and oh my God, Sohail.
This is, you know what, this is a beautiful thing. This is how amazing is this that you have to name off, like there's so many names and so many people working on this stuff that you can't even, you know for a fact that you're forgetting somebody. You just know you're forgetting a whole bunch of people. This is a great thing. You know, this means that it's growing. And again, and I'll say this to you, I mean, you know this, like we've talked for hours and hours and hours over the last 3 years and more, right? But I gotta say this to you, I was like, I think that
Mariam Namozi.
Yes.
I'm trying to like keep going, but go on, you finish.
Yeah, the way that you've exposed this cult, right, of Hindu bhakt, like mainly Modi supporting nationalists, to be even more vile than the Islamists and the Islamic fundamentalists is just absolutely, it's just long overdue.
I can tell you that the Muslims that used to come at me and hated me, they looked at what's happening with the Hindus and they're shocked. They were scared for me. They were like, they hated me, but they were trying to protect my mom. The Muslims that usually attack me, they were like trying to protect my mom. They were like, what the hell is this? Like the Muslims could not believe that. You know, it was amazing. It was amazing to see that the Muslims that, you know, that really, they also had vile attacks maybe before, but they were like, okay, this is like too far even for us.
I have one last question. I'm sorry. Nobody here has actually asked this, but I think that a lot of people will be listening to this are going to want to know is how do you do it? I mean, you've heard like the most vile things. I mean, the kind of things that would probably emotionally completely destroy people and just turn them off of this forever. How do you?
I don't want to answer that. That seems like self-congratulating.
No, I'm not talking about. Forget about the self-congratulating. I want to know because there are a lot of people out there who want to do this. But
no, don't do it. Don't do it. It's not. I do 0 out of 5. I don't recommend. It's not good. It's not healthy.
Smaller scale, Armin. What I'm saying is, there are, for example, a lot of ex-Muslim women who want to come out and speak up. Many of them don't because of this fear of being harassed and everything. So, what is your advice to them if they want to do this?
I don't think you should go based on me because, dude, I jumped out of the window just to be able to go avoid going to hell. Like, I mean, I take extreme measures based on the results that I want to see, right? So I'm not normal. I shouldn't use me as a way to, you know, to see what's the best thing to do. I don't think it is. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm in a position. Here's the thing. We're all very different. Every single one of us is very different, very different. And you have to figure out what works for you rather than trying to look at some other person's success. I mean, yeah, we have to look at some other people's success and try to see if we want to use that strategy. But again, it has to work for you as well, or else you're not going to be able to continue, right? It's kind of like, it's kind of like diets, right? Like you look at the science, you look at what's working, but you also have to figure out what motivates you. And, you know, that's also part of the equation. You also have to figure out, you know, what works for you. Like you can't ignore the science. It cannot be like, oh, I'm just going to ignore the science. I'm just going to go based on what's going to work for me. No, you have to look at the data, but you can't also just look at the data and be like, well, I'm just going to do what the data says, because then you're going to do a fad, you know, something that you're going to do for a week and then you're going to crash and burn and you're not going to continue. You also have to pay attention to what works for you, right? So do not look at, you know, other people's methods and see what works. And do not just look at that alone. Also look at what yourself and see what makes you motivated as well. So actually, this is my recommendation, okay? Do your version of activism. Figure out, reflect on what motivates you when it comes to, when it comes to doing activism, okay? That is, some people think like the level of harm is the only thing that matters when it comes to doing activism. It's not, because if you only focus on the level of harm, you're not going to be able to continue. You don't have limitless passion that you could tap into to do some good in the world, right? So even if you're focusing on something that is not the greatest harm in the world, but makes you get up in the morning and makes you motivated to do something, you know, that's good. At least you're doing something rather than nothing. Okay. So your own interests and your own motivations should be part of the calculation, not just the level of the harm. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah. Okay. And on that note, I think that's a good note to end on. Just everybody remember, whenever you hear them talk about Abrahamic religions and everything, remember the word Abraham comes from Brahma, the Hindu thing. So just, well,
does it really? Like Abraham, citation
needed. Abraham's father came from Ur, like you are the city. It's like named in the Bible, and that was like in transition from India. Hey. Actually, you know, this is one of the things that Deepak Chopra talked about that he was right about.
Okay, we need to go.
Abraham's wife, Sarah, Brahma and Saraswati. Abraham and Sarah. It's a very, very similar story. Go look it up.
Google. Okay, when I say citation is needed, I didn't think you're going to say Deepak Chopra. No, I'm kidding. But better citation is needed. But very fascinating if true.
Yeah. So let's look it up. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'll see. All right, everybody. Take care. Be best.
All right, guys. Leave a review for us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app, please. That helps us grow. Okay? Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The Secular Jihadists have been made possible thanks to the Illuminati and the covert support of Israel and the CIA. That's what we have been told, but we haven't received our checks yet. If you like what we do, please support us. Share the podcast with your friends. Write and tweet us with topic and guest suggestions. Or head over to secularjihadist.com and give a dollar or more for exclusive access to live video. Have your questions read and answered on the air and more. Till next time, may the flying spaghetti monster be with you.